This is KCSB 91.9 in FM, KCSB 91.9 FM, and there we go, in Santa Barbara. My name's Colin Marshall. Good morning to you. This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. We have a lot of fun stuff today. It's going to be, in fact, a fun show, sort of a fun-themed show, if you will. Later on the show, we've got Ali Cummingore, the music producer for this program and the associate arts editor at the Santa Barbara Independent, coming in to discuss her music writing in Santa Barbara, the music scene here, and her recent interview with Stevie Nicks, which is being very well emailed right now on independent.com. She supplied this track, by the way. It's from Waves is the name of the band, and that's spelled W-A-V-V-E-S. The cut is King of the Beach. They're playing Soho Monday, August 16th. So she'll be in later, but first we're going to talk about something that every Santa Barbaran knows is going to start very, very soon. It is Fiesta, and I'll bring the music down and we will bring our guest on. We are joined again in the studio by our man on the beat, Barney Brantigan, and welcome.
Morning to you, Colin. Good to be here.
Now, this is Santa Barbara, so I feel like this morning I was thinking, brushing my teeth, we don't really have to explain Fiesta, but then again, you know, nothing is presumed on the part of the listener as far as knowledge. We presume great intelligence, but no specific knowledge. So when an out-of-towner, when a friend from somewhere else asks you, you know, what is this Fiesta thing you Santa Barbarans are going on about, what do you tell them?
Ooh, I tell them food. I tell them horses. I tell them a lot of people in costume. I tell them a lot of fun. And what I do, what I've been doing for the last, umpteen years or more, is eating my way through Fiesta and writing about it, what I found out there.
Now tell me, how did the culinary angle start? How did that become your thing to do in Fiesta?
Well, of course, I wrote for the Santa Barbara News Press for a zillion years, and right below our building was De La Guerra Plaza, and the Mercado there has a whole bunch of booths, food booths, and you went from one to another. So there it was right in front of me. So I started writing about it and sort of searching for the perfect taco or the best taco, and then it sort of went from there.
How much does the food selection change from year to year? You've seen a lot of Fiestas. You've been around here a while. And what's the variation? I think somebody who sees two or three Fiestas thinks maybe it's always the same. But even by your columns, you can tell there's some change, right?
It's always the same.
It's always the same? You write about different things then each time.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I say it's always the same, it just seems like it's always the same. Now, one thing about eating your way through Fiesta is you find food you do not ordinarily run into.
Right.
Like goat.
Yes, indeed. I remember you mentioning that. You know, you say in your column, life is short, eat some goat. And I couldn't agree more.
Well, yeah. You don't find it at the Mexican restaurants around town. But there it is normally. And I'm hoping to find it tomorrow when I make my rounds. The Raul Gil at the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce booth, he's always got, the last few years anyway, goat tacos.
Oh, yes.
And people are afraid to try them. Oh, my golly, what's it going to taste like? And it's kind of like beef.
It's funny.
You wouldn't really know.
People being afraid to try goat, I think of the places I go in Santa Barbara, like a La Colmena or a Lily's, where I eat cheek and eye and tongue tacos, but goat, it's a little scary.
Oh, well, that I haven't found at Fiesta yet. That's a little far out for the folks.
Fair enough. What else do you like to eat there, goat aside?
I like cheese taco, cheese enchiladas. And it seems like every year Fiesta finishes, and I haven't had my cheese enchiladas. For some reason, it's not you'd think it would be a major item on it in every booth.
Right, but first thing you see, I would imagine, but no?
No, for some reason. Now, there's two main venues, the Mercado at De La Guerra Plaza,
right,
which is small and gets packed, especially tomorrow at noon. There will be shoulder to shoulder out there. There'll be lines forming. That's why I get there at 11 a.m.
An early lunch to begin things, right?
Well, so I can move around and take notes and not wait in line. But the other one is the north side at Mackenzie Park. And that has more room. And now they're set right as we speak. They're setting up the carnival. There's rides for the kids. It's just like a carnival midway. Right. And there are booths, not quite as much variety and not quite as much food, but things you don't find downtown.
Oh, I see.
That are not Hispanic. there's Italian sausage, right. German sausage. I've found Thai food out there, stuff that you never know what to expect.
And most of the stuff you write about in your columns, if I have this right, it's you typically focus on the Latin and South American type of food, correct?
Oh, yeah. This is old quote, Spanish days.
Exactly.
Or old Mexican days. But it's kind of, there's corn on the cob. There's all kinds of things that aren't associated with south of the border.
One of the foods you mention is the chicken mole, or it's just the mole itself you can get during fiesta. And that's it's always nice for me to hear there's another source for that stuff, because it can be tough to find. I mean, where do you like the mole at fiesta?
Well, that's a tough one, because it's an exotic, to a lot of people, an exotic dish, because it's chocolate.
Right. They picture a chocolate bar melted over chicken, I imagine.
Yes, but it's Mexican chocolate. It's spicy. It's not at all the same. It isn't like eating gooey chocolate. And frankly, I don't know where I'd find it. Los Arroyos restaurant out in downtown and out on Coast Village Road have it on like certain days.
Right.
But I love mole. You can't find it. And I don't know where I would. Maybe I'll have to look for it tomorrow.
Yes, indeed. I'm going to check it for it at Fiesta as well. I don't know if you tried the Rose Cafe down on Haley, because they have pretty good mole.
Oh, well, thanks for the tip.
I'll let that one loose there. I don't know if that's a big secret or not, but it's pretty good now. So you mentioned in the columns as well that there's certain foods you grew to love during your time in Panama. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about that, but about what foods you came to love and can't find here and maybe can find in Fiesta these days.
Well, when I was in Panama in the Army, I grew to love arroz con pollo, chicken and rice. And they have their way of preparing it. And frankly, I found it in booths here at Fiesta, but not the same. They just have a different way of doing it. It's drier and a lot of rice. And Panama, it's moister. There are more vegetables in it. And the chicken is like, you'll find a chicken leg. you'll find bigger pieces.
Right.
So, sadly, I have not found, like a lot of our childhood or our youthful memories, you know, mom's chicken soup, mom's meatloaf. You can't find it because, you know, it's that memory you've got that can never be rekindled.
Right. It exists in your mind better than maybe it can exist in the real world today.
But I'll be looking for it.
Yes,
I'll be looking
definitely.
For arroz con pollo. Now, here's something that isn't – I'm holding a Fiesta Old Spanish Days booklet that tells all where everything is. But there's one thing that is not in here, and it's a tradition – of Fiesta. It's the Our Lady of Guadalupe Church.
Yes.
They have, you know, the church ladies get together and they have these booths. They make their traditional, typical foods. And that's, you know, the insiders, people around town know this, but newcomers may not be aware of it. So on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday afternoon, even to the evening, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church, out in the plaza, you'll find people thronging. It's kind of the people's fiesta down there. And the cognoscenti find their way down there. And, of course, it's for a good cause. And that's something to do.
It's a location I've heard a lot about in your column and elsewhere. People will always say that's where you really got to go if you really want to eat during Fiesta. And how different is it? I want to get an idea of just how unlike other food stalls in the Fiesta you would find. I mean, what's different about it?
Well, if you go down to, say, De La Guerra Plaza tomorrow around noon, you'll be rubbing elbows with the bank tellers, the city hall clerks, the tourists, the locals all dressed up in their finery. But at Guadalupe, it's the kind of, I don't know quite how to put it, the real people. They aren't tourists.
Right.
They're the folks in the neighborhood who go to the church, who live within walking distance, and it's more like something I think you'd find in Mexico, in a small town.
I live not far from Guadalupe, so that's a good thing to hear from me. I won't have to go very far for a true Fiesta experience.
That's it. And there's music. However, a lot of people never get there. They go to De La Guerra Plaza, which is fun, but it gets very crowded.
Yes.
There's music and dancing. My granddaughter has danced there for years, and it's packed full of little kids in their costumes waiting for their turn to get up there and stomp around. And there are a lot of shows out in the north side. It turns out to be Western music.
Really?
Yeah, it's different on the north side. The parking, of course, is horrendous.
Right. I would imagine. Now, if you've just tuned in, by the way, this is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. My name is Colin Marshall, your host as usual, talking this morning with our man on the beat, Barney Brantingham, who every year eats his way through Fiesta. And Fiesta, by the way, it's starting very soon. I think every Santa Barbara knows that, but just making sure. Now, I want to talk a little bit about, as you mentioned, there's the parking. That's one thing. But what are some strategies, parking tricks aside, that you have for tackling Fiesta? You mentioned getting there early as a way that you can get some journalistic impressions, but what else do you recommend people do? I mean, not to let out any secrets of doing Fiesta, but to get a little bit of a better experience, whether they're eating their way through it or what have you.
Get there early.
Yes, indeed.
Especially in the evening. Both venues get packed. And so I would get there, say you're going for taking the kids there for dinner. Get there earlier rather than later, because it does get crowded, especially downtown. If you have families and kids, north side is the place to go. There's more room. There's more tables. There are a zillion kids for them to have fun with. Downtown, it's downtown.
It is. It is certainly that. Now, it does seem like it gets crowded enough that when you're in the thick of it, it can be a little confusing to figure out necessarily what's what and where to go. Is there any way to approach that makes it any clearer other than just kind of jumping in and taking where the flow goes, essentially?
Well, that's the fun of Fiesta,
indeed.
Sort of spontaneous. What's here? What can I find? What's in this booth? You wander around, you see things you've never seen before, or the good old-fashioned favorites that you're waiting for. I mean, there are some booths downtown where I think it's a Special Olympics booth. It's the standard taco. You're going to get taco 101, and that's great. And there's a bunch of guys who clown around in there, and of course it's for a good cause, but
nice.
I'd say be spontaneous. Look for just see what your stomach and your taste buds tell you to do. And I have a problem because how much can I eat?
Yeah, so I was gonna ask.
I'm sitting here with my wife Sue, and we share.
Yes,
so yes. I can at least don't have to fill up right away. I can sort of share it with her and then move on to the next booth. And it's fun talking. If you can, I know the lines get long, but it's kind of fun talking to the people behind the counter there. Who are they? And, where are they from? Did they make that? And you look behind them, you see people in the back there making tortillas, and it's more than the eating. It's a community thing. These are locals, and all those booths that you see support nonprofits. A lot of nonprofits around town. That's one of their major fundraisers of the year.
You've been able to find fascinating stories then of the booth owners and operators by just simply asking?
Yes, yeah. Oh. And you find some stories afterwards that, well, how did you do this year? Oh, we did all this work. We spent all this money, and and we didn't get much out of it.
Oh, really?
It sort of depends. Like one year, my daughter was working at a fish taco booth. And, well, that didn't do very well. So it's just fun to talk to the people behind the scenes. But I think a lot of those booths do make a pretty good sum.
Seeing some of the crowds there, and you mentioned in your column, in one of your columns, maybe more than one, that you see a big line. You'll want to get in that line. That seems counterintuitive, but it makes sense in a way. What's the reasoning behind go to the booths with the big lines?
Well, I think it's like going. You walk along the street and you look into a restaurant. It's empty. It's not that appealing somehow. But the next place, it's crowded with people, it's noisy, yeah. And people are waiting. You say, well, they've got something here. There are two or three booths that do form lines, and they go pretty fast. So I'm not one for lines, really. That's why I get there early, but that's a tip-off.
The booths that do get these big crowds, are these the ones that have been there for 10, 20, however many fiestas, the true traditions, the true institutions of fiesta?
Yeah, Sue's nodding, agreeing with you. Yeah, you see the same ones. I'd say 10 or 20% are new every year. But you see the same old, same old, and you know what you're going to get. And I'd say people who have never had this kind of food before should just dig in there and try it, and don't be afraid, and eat the goat. It's not going to kill you. It's tasty. This fiesta's fun eating.
When you get your food, when you've had your fill, when you've had all the food you can possibly have for the research of a column, what is your next priority? What are your favorite things? What have been your favorite things at Fiesta that have nothing to do with the food?
Well, the parade is always a kick. Hmm. You know, you say, oh, golly, how many parades have I seen? But you stand there and you see these wonderful, wonderful horses with silver tack, riders decked out. And some years it's the biggest horse parade in the country.
Oh, really?
Depends on how many come that year, but hundreds and hundreds.
Right.
Great horses, and I've ridden in a couple of Fiesta parades, and it's a kick.
Yeah, I want to know more about your experience riding that. What is that like, riding in the parade?
Well, it can be good and not so good. One year, I got a horse. We're over there at Pershing Park, and I mounted up, and I'm not the greatest rider in the world, and this horse was not functioning. He didn't want to do anything. And we started walking toward the parade route, and it got scary. I did not want to take this guy down middle of State Street with thousands of little kids a few feet away.
Yikes.
I went back, but that's an exception.
Right.
So it is fun to be on a horse and block after block, kids yelling, people applauding. It's fun. If you can find your way to do it, because it's one of the things to do at Fiesta, and well, not everyone gets a chance, but that is something I enjoyed. I'd do it again if I had an opportunity.
How many fiestas have you attended total? I know maybe you don't have the number right now, but what's a rough estimate of your total fiesta count?
I'd say 50.
50 fiestas.
50 fiestas.
Now, I don't know if this is necessarily how Fiesta works, but do any particular fiestas stand out in your mind as just the best of the best or the most interesting that you've experienced, or is it more of a continuum kind of?
Well, they are different. Mm. Some years, you know, the El Presidente. He's the guy. He's the or woman. They bring women.
He or she presides over all the proceedings.
Yeah. So if you know them beforehand and you hang around with them, or they invite you to this or that, and that's been the most fun for me.
So does it depend on how much proximity you have to El Presidente, or does the type of fiesta it is depend on El Presidente? How much influence does El Presidente excuse me, have over the over what goes on there at the fiesta, over over what kind of fiesta that year's fiesta is?
Well, fiesta is really a group of people,
yeah.
volunteers. This is all volunteers.
Right. Should emphasize that.
In fact, last night they had a gathering of the marshal, parade marshals, and I don't know, there were more than 100 of them. I didn't happen to be there, but they volunteer their time. They organize. They have their – they're very dedicated people.
Right.
Because you need them. So there's a – fiesta is run by a group of volunteers, men and women who get together, give their time. In fact, they will tell you the day fiesta ends, like this weekend – they start planning for the next one.
Oh, really? It's like immediately afterward. It's what are we going to do for the next one?
Right. How can we change it? What's new? What didn't work? And so FES is more than just the El Presidente. It's a bunch of people who are dedicated. They become El Presidente. Then they sort of move on and someone else, yes. someone else's turn. So it's a group effort. And as I say, it's non-governmental. Just a bunch of people who give their time, and a lot of time.
Right. It seems like a large undertaking. And you mentioned at the beginning of the interview that the food tends to initially feel the same through the years, but the fiestas themselves, how much change happens over the years? I mean, is it sort of a progress? Like the first fiesta you went to was quite different than the current one you'll be going to, but each two next to each other are kind of similar? Or what's, I guess, how much do you expect to be different every time?
You know, fiesta is the same.
Yeah.
In feeling, in attitude, and it's sort of, that's one of the things I say, that fiesta never changes, but it does as we change a little bit every year. One of the craziest things that ever happened was, I think, back in the 60s or 70s, they decided to run longhorn cattle right down State Street during the Fiesta Parade.
Oh,
I think that
might have
been J.J. Hollister, a rancher. And there they were, just walking along State Street, longhorns, and just, 10 feet away, these little kids were sitting there. And they said, oh, they're tame, they're no problem at all. But the insurance people didn't quite see it that way, so that didn't happen again.
It was fine that time then, but we're not so sure they're going to be fine every time.
So there are those surprises. And like on the north side, now they have the carnival rides for the kids. That never happened before.
Hmm. When did that get introduced?
Ooh, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago.
Oh, I see.
Fairly recently.
Right.
Because they're always trying to do more things. And the north side is families and kids.
And so we mentioned what food you're anticipating when at the start of Fiesta. I want to close this by just getting an idea of, even besides that, what you're most looking forward to first when this Fiesta begins.
Well, you know, most of the things of Fiesta are free.
Yeah,
and one of the nicest things I've ever seen has been in the evenings at the courthouse, where they have the dances, the night falls, people are out on blankets, and the moon comes up, and you're watching old time dances, and there's kind of there's a nostalgic feeling about that, and a community feeling, and we're all there together. And we're here for the fun of it, and we're enjoying this local, hometown scene.
I've been talking to Barney Branting. I'm our man on the beat at the Santa Barbara Independent, who eats his way through Fiesta every year and is going to have a good time, I can already tell, this year as well, like so many of us. Barney, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Colin.
Once again, this is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM. Do stay tuned. We have more on the way. We're going to talk to Allie Cummingore, who arranges the music for the show and who does a lot of music editing and music writing for the Independent. She'll be in here soon. Stay tuned right now. It is Skylar Stone Street with a track called Magazine Paper. Going to have some details about that show, which will happen in Santa Barbara soon when we come back.
Trust me, I still have the straw you gave. Oh, how I miss.
Invisible Man. I'm the invisible, invisible, invisible man. Incredible how you can see right through me.
UCSB Arts and Lectures, the Santa Barbara County Park Foundation, Santa Barbara County Arts Commission, and Santa Barbara Film Commission present Monsters, classic horror films, from Universal Pictures. Free film screenings through August 27th. Wednesday, August 4th, will feature the spine-tingling thriller based on H.G. Wells' classic novel, The Invisible Man, starring Claude Rains in his screen debut as a mysterious doctor who discovers a serum that makes him invisible. But the same drug, which renders him invisible, slowly drives him to commit acts of unspeakable terror. The Invisible Man screens on Wednesday, August 4th at 7:30 p.m. at UCSB Campbell Hall. There will be no Friday screening. All summer cinema screenings are free. For more information, call UCSB Arts and Lectures at 805-893-3535 or visit online at artsandlectures.ucsb.edu.
Aiding Haitian Education and Development, AHEAD, is a student-run organization founded in 2009 to raise awareness on the UCSB campus and the larger community about the many issues which plague Haiti. AHEAD is now asking for your support in aiding the victims of the devastating earthquake, which has claimed the lives of nearly 300,000 people and left several million others homeless. Along with Blime Aid, a relief initiative that began in 2007 to support orphans in Haiti, AHEAD seeks to organize the Santa Barbara community in an effort to collect the 10 staples of life. The 10 staples of life include rice, beans, milk powder, liquid formulas, peanut butter, only in plastic jars please, dried meat, spaghetti, cooking oil, bleach tablets, and multivitamins. There are two designated drop-off spots where you can bring these items. One is located at the main entrance to Davidson Library, and the other one is located near the main entrance to the University Center. Once collected, these food items will be shipped directly to two orphanages in Port-au-Prince. For more information on the food drive, please visit either lime-aid.tv or AHEAD's Facebook page. Cash donations are also appreciated and are tax-deductible via Lime Aid's parent organization, Global Water Trust. Let's not forget about Haiti. Thank you very much for your generosity and support of this ongoing project.
The Santa Barbara Contemporary Arts Forum's Forum Lounge series continues its popular screenings of award-winning animations with the Best of the Ottawa International Animation Film Festival on Thursday, August 5th at 7 p.m. The collection of shorts features David O'Reilly's sci-fi drama, Please Say Something, Diego McLean's haunting student film, The Art of Drowning, and Bastien Dubois' captivating travelogue, Madagascar, A Journey Diary, among others. The Contemporary Arts Forum is located upstairs at 653 Paseo Nuevo. The event is free and open to the public, and is part of the monthly First Thursday Evening of Art and Culture in downtown Santa Barbara. For more information, go to www.sbcaf.org. KCSB is a media supporter of the Santa Barbara Contemporary Arts Forum's Forum Lounge series.
On Thursday, August 12th, the Santa Barbara New Music Series presents an evening with the Gove County String Quartet, featuring Laura Hackstein and Sally Barr on violin, Nick Coventry on viola, and Jim Connolly on bass, and the Vlatkovich Roper Brass Duo, featuring LA improvisers Michael Vlatkovich on trombone and William Roper on tuba. Before, between, and after the sets, I, Colin Marshall, will have my decks and be spinning the finest ambient, experimental, and sound art tracks. That's the Gove County String Quartet, the Vlatkovich Roper Brass Duo, and yours truly, DJ Colin Marshall at 8 p.m. on Thursday, August 12th at Muddy Waters, 508 East Haley Street in downtown Santa Barbara. For more information on the Santa Barbara New Music Series, visit Culture Frazier, CulturFrazier.com.
You ready? Hey.
All right. So we're just going to do a simple ID. All I have to do is say, hi, my name is Ben.
Uh-huh.
You're listening to KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara.
Okay. So what we're in...
Here, let's write it down.
Santa what? San Ysidro?
Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara.
KCSB 91.9 FM.
FM. It isn't PM?
No, it's FM.
FM.
In Santa Barbara.
In Santa Barbara.
Okay, you ready?
Okay. What's the name I'm supposed to say?
KCSB?
No, the name.
Oh, your name.
Oh, my name. Okay.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Go.
Okay. Hey, everyone. This is Ben, and you're listening to KCSB at 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara.
All right. Good.
Great.
Okay.
So, we were here to talk about my movie, right?
No. Sorry. We're not talking about that anymore.
Okay. Sorry. Thanks for having me.
And we're back on Poodle Radio on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. And I don't even need to introduce this track. It's from, of course, Stevie Nicks, so obviously I'm going to introduce it anyway. Stand Back. She's playing the bowl on Wednesday, August 4th. Before the break, we heard, who did we hear from? Skylar Stonestreet, looks like, with a cut called Magazine Paper. She's playing in front of Borders on Saturday, August 7th. And those cuts, as I always say, are rounded up by the Indies Associate Arts Editor, Allie Cummingore, who is actually right here with me. Allie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's about time, right?
Indeed. No, I'm very glad to have you on. And first of all, I should ask, given that we've just played Stevie, how does it feel to have written the number one most emailed article on independent.com right now?
In the least amount of time, I was told. Supposedly it takes over 24 hours for that stuff to generate buzz.
Wow.
And that thing hopped up the charts. It was really cool, actually. I think we were one of the first to talk to her about her new record, which is going to be like her first, you know, full album of new material in 10 years or some craziness. So
nice.
That, you know, it immediately, I guess, what did they say? It went viral.
Now, before I ask this next thing, I'm going to ask you to move that mic a little closer to you. You're sounding okay, but it's, there we go. Now, You've got an article go viral. You've set records at the Indie. And how did this come about? I mean, Stevie Nicks isn't like giving interviews all the time. So this came about because she had a sort of special show here in Santa Barbara?
Correct. And I, of course, did not know this going in. So the lovely Miss Nicks gets on the phone and kind of, you know, steers things in her direction. But there's a small child that lives down, it's an 8-year-old, lives down in Los Angeles and is a family friend of hers that she met a couple years back. And she was recently diagnosed with a very, very rare form of cancer. And so upon hearing this, she kind of already had tour dates set up and went to her manager and said that she wanted to do something to help this child financially. And I guess in order to, you know, put stuff like that together and orchestrate a foundation, it takes years and years and years. So she set up the Santa Barbara show solely so she could have a way of just donating her salary straight from, you know, her pocket to this family.
I would imagine the bowl was like, oh, okay, we'll take you. That's a place of high profile acts, of course. I mean, I live close enough that I hear I hear it as clearly as if I were there, actually, in my bedroom. You know, Depeche Mode, for example, I was like hearing them on a boombox outside. I thought they were on a boombox outside for a while. So I'm looking forward to hearing Stevie Nicks the same way. But she was telling you then about this whole backstory, and it sounds as if that there was a... It was a distinctive sort of interviewing experience. Is that a good way to put talking to Stevie Nicks on the phone as you were doing?
I would say that for a number of reasons. I think personally, it's one of those things that it just kind of it makes your, you know, small music writing career in a kind of big way. I was joking and, you know, told somebody, it was like, my dad, a lovely, lovely, wonderful individual, you know, doesn't say too much about my job. And he called me the next day and was like, my mother told me what you did. So, she was fantastic. She had so much to say. And I feel like it's one of those people that over the course of her however many years in this business has, you know, spoken to a countless number of journalists and knows what she wants to get out. But once she's done doing that, wants to sit back and answer every single question and be the most forthcoming person in rock and roll.
Yeah, you know, you always want that. I do an interview show here on the station myself, aside from this, and I talk to someone well-known, and I'm never quite sure. You know, I'm sure you think about it. The question being, like, are they going to give me boilerplate, or are they going to give me, like, real stuff? How do you think of it?
I think of it as, are they going to make you work for it, or aren't they?
Oh, I see.
And so you kind of prepare yourself to go into battle and be able to counter back to people that, I mean, you always get once in the blue moon, the person that's going to give you the one line answer. And then you're sitting there and everything, you know, all of your material is gone in 5 minutes. It's like playing, you know, to a empty room when you're doing stand up. You've got to have something to work off of. So you do that. And with her, I went in with a, you know, laundry list of questions and barely got to ask five because she just wanted to talk. So, I mean, that's the ideal situation, I think, at any point.
Right. And it's something about just interviewing technique I was interested to ask you because I find no matter how many questions I pre-write, I never use them, so I just stopped pre-writing questions. I found it didn't work. Like, you'll notice I have in the studio here some notes that I'm just, they're over there. I'm not even, you know, I've never been able to ask pre-written questions. Do you find that you can make that work? You can make a question you wrote beforehand actually, like, fit into the interview and make it flow right and all that?
Sometimes. Mm. I think that I've gone from pre-writing questions to kind of, like, diagramming where I could, see things going.
Right.
And, like you said, it rarely actually goes that way. But
that's
no,
a good thing often.
It's funny. And I think the more comfortable that you get with doing anything, it's like, you know, when I go and review shows, I take a notepad with me, and it's almost like a crutch to write it down. But how often do I go back and look at them?
Right.
Like,
it helps you remember in your mind by writing it down is how I rationalize.
Exactly.
It
it's like studying for a test in college. Right. If you're making the flashcards is all the study you need, you never have to use them.
Hopefully. Because using flashcards is not that fun. Now, this interview, it sounds like it was a fun one and a good one and an informative one. And you can tell reading the most emailed independent.com article you've written that it was, she had a lot of interesting things to say. And, you know, it's the way you want it to go. But put this in a context for me with some of the other, I mean, you interview almost exclusively musicians, I want to say.
Yeah, there's a rare occasion where it turns into doing something with a film, like either an actor or a filmmaker. There are a couple visual artists either in town or coming through town that I've, you know, picked up to do stuff on just because it's of interest to me and or nobody else wants to do it.
Now, put this into context with the other interviews you've done. I mean, I know some. Were you the one to do the, I know that there was a New Kids on the Block interview that went pretty far south. Was that you?
That unfortunately was not me, but it was a really, really dear friend and old colleague of mine. She actually came on as an intern. Her name was Lisa. And she had this, she came in kind of green and had like no experience and started picking stuff up and ended up with just like this phenomenal track record of doing little things for me. And so the opportunity came about, and I think I was out of town or something. I was like, Lisa, you can take this over. And so she prepped her questions, and she went in, and things kind of went from bad to worse. Like, when you get it on, especially with bull shows, you get on the phone with kind of, quote-unquote, high-profile acts, and there's a mediator there. And
oh, whoa. Let's slow down here. So you get the least known New Kid on the Block, but you also have a mediator.
His handler.
Oh, dear.
And
not an experience I've had. This isn't a new territory. Anyway, continue.
The story was amazing. They had played a couple of shows in their heads, gotten rave reviews, in actuality kind of been panned in the media for what are they doing? What, this is kind of one of the worst comebacks I've ever seen. And so she, you know, prompted very sweetly, I think, from what I hear, asked him, you know, how are things going and how does it feel to, you know, play these big venues again? And is it the same and is it different? And the woman jumped in and was like, interview over.
Oh,
that's
my
the
God.
End of it. So,
wow. And the new kid himself probably would have answered. I mean, I'll say this. I'll throw this out there. People, I find the closer you get to the actual person, past the publicist, past the handlers, past the A&R and the PR, you'll get people who will engage with you. Do you find that as well?
I think so. I think that it's almost too many cooks in the kitchen. There's so many opinions and hands into what you're doing at that point that there's the rare person that's completely detached from reality and thinks that they're, you know, the cat's pajamas at all times. But I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have gone as bad if there had been less people involved.
But even that's fascinating in a way. I mean, even if, say, you're talking to, and I'll emphasize again, you didn't do the New Kids on the Block interview, but it's just an example. Or even you can talking to someone like Stevie Nicks, who, you know, was a good interview, but also maybe qualifies from the detached from reality designation in some maybe good ways, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But there's always kind of the question you want to ask. I mean, if you're talking to a new kid on the block, you know, I would always want to ask them, what does it feel like to be, you know, 40 years old and thinking back to 1990 where you could have whatever you wanted by pointing at it. Now you kind of have to re-earn your fame. I mean, that's an interesting question. And I imagine, do you find you get to ask the interesting questions of, say, the rock stars or the various other high profile people you talk to? Do you feel like you can always ask the question you want to know the answer to?
I feel like yes. I feel like if it could potentially go sour, that's where the notes come in, because you put that one at the end.
Oh, I see.
And so if you're going to get hung up on, at least you've got 15 minutes of stuff that comes before.
Have you gotten hung up on?
No, I haven't. I've seen other people get hung up on, though, and it's not pretty.
Oh, dear. Now, it is. I want to get an idea here of how you got to this position of interviewing Stevie Nicks, of doing all this cool stuff, of reviewing shows. And I believe when I first met you briefly, you were editing the Arts Week supplement here on the campus at the Daily Nexus. I'm pointing to the next door over there through the wall where the office of the Nexus is. What was your journey there from the Nexus to what you're doing now for the Indie?
Oh, this is funny. I went to, they do Nexus training on campus a couple of times a year, and I went to one, and they kind of put you through, you know, this obstacle course of learning how to write news stories for 2 days. And then they turn you loose on the office, and I kind of beelined for the arts department and said, I just figured out how to write like an inverted pyramid story, but I want to review CDs. So there were two amazing, you know, an editor and an associate editor who are in fact getting married in a couple of months now. Mm. And
Brenna and Danny
are getting married.
Inside Nexus reference for you listeners.
And they took me under their wing and said, you know, we're graduating. Do you want to learn what we're doing? And so hung out with them for about a year and learned the ropes and took over that with an associate editor at the time and ran the Arts Week section for a week, which is fun because it's in a lot of ways really different. You're putting together like the physical aspects of the paper rather than just writing and turning it over to somebody else.
Right. You get a lot of control.
And then The Independent came after I got out of UCSB and they were building up the website actually and they were looking for someone just to do editing for online stories. And I came in and started doing that. And then the pop culture editor at the time was moving up north, and it was just kind of a right place at the right time thing. I had the experience and kind of followed her around like a puppy dog and learned the ropes there, which were different ropes, surprisingly, and, you know, fell into it that way.
If you've just tuned in, this is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM in, of course, Santa Barbara. My name's Colin Marshall, your host as always. I'm talking to Ali Cumingore, the official Poodle Radio music producer, music wrangler, whatever you want to call her. She gets the music together for these shows, and she's also the associate arts editor at The Independent. Now, as far as covering the Santa Barbara music scene, people would look at a town this size and think there wouldn't be much of one, but you seem to find a whole lot going on. I mean, it's even just the tracks I get show there's a lot of shows going on here. How do you describe the Santa Barbara music scene? How do you think about it to yourself, and how do you tell people about it who aren't from here? Like, you know, what's going on? What's good about it or bad about it?
There are a number of good things, and I think with any town, especially a town of this size, a number of, you know, drawbacks. The great part of it is that we've got, you know, if you count Brooks, four sizable campuses that have young people mulling around Santa Barbara County. And, you know, I think with youth comes music. So there are little clusters. There's obviously the Isla Vista music scene has been something that I've tried to keep a finger on for the past, like, 6 years. So in that aspect, there's a lot of new stuff that's up and coming, and it's a great place for people to meet other people, kind of find like minds, and at least start a band. Whether or not it continues on, you know, depends on them. The fallback being that because it's, you know, a city with so many colleges, is that there's a, you know, almost a time stamp on a lot of stuff because so many people get out of school and move somewhere else. But, you know, more and more there's show spaces up in Goleta and Isla Vista that, you know, pop up or come back from hibernation or whatever you want to call it. There are, you know, smaller venues downtown now that are starting to open up more to all ages venues. And I think that all of these things in combination kind of create and facilitate a music scene. And I think that it was, for me, in the past 3 or 4 years, I've seen it go from getting there to kind of being there. And I think now, I feel like for me, it's now, it's almost there. There's a lot of people that have invested a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into it. So it's cool to see it growing and burgeoning.
Now, as far as venues here, there's a few favorites that I have. You know, I always enjoy the Mercury Lounge, but without a car, I pay $35 for a cab back home. Muddy Waters is great. I really like Muddy Waters. I DJ there sometimes, so full disclosure. But where do you like especially to go in Santa Barbara, whether you're covering something or not?
Those are two really good. Muddy Waters is very, very dear to my heart for a number of reasons. I think Bill, that half co-owns and does the majority of the booking down there, is just one of those genuine people that absolutely loves music. And he puts stuff in there because he believes in it and because he cares about it. And not to say that he's putting on huge rock shows and you can say that he takes care of his artists, but he really does. I mean, he befriends every single person that plays there and, you know, purchases merch out of his pocket and tries so hard to make sure that everybody there has a good time. And so that's how I would describe like the perfect venue, if only we were a tiny bit bigger.
But right. It took Billy Corgan, didn't it?
Yeah, it took Billy Corgan and Dave Navarro on one night. So there you go.
that I have to imagine was pushing some sort of fire code as far as the crowd.
I was standing on a couch, so probably
that kind of L-shaped one in the back there?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Yes, now those are two good venues. And as far as the type of music here, and it seems like a decent town to catch a rock show in, you know, the various, if we want to use this super broad kind of indie rock amorphous categorization, but you write about this stuff. What are the music genres, subgenres that are good here, or what's good to find here?
I think that we've got an amazing collection of singer-songwriters in... I feel like that's always the genre that gets like swept under the rug because it's done so often, and for all intents and purposes, it's the easiest thing to do to pick up a guitar and sit down on a chair and start playing your songs. But
it's a low barrier to entry.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no finding a bassist. but I've met some really, really great singer-songwriters and gotten to see them play and kind of strut their stuff both on stage and then, for example, Skylar, whose music you played earlier, she... Mm-hmm. Isn't from here, but has played here so many times, and she's one of those, like, she genuinely writes a good song. So, there's that. I think that our, you know, sadly, hip-hop scene is semi-lacking. We've got more bookers that I think are trying to bring in outside acts, in which case they can bring up kind of whatever local hip-hop acts we have to play, but I don't know how much of a market there is for it, or if, I don't know. It seems to do really well in large venues when they do harder stadium shows. They've got, you
once
know,
a year.
Yeah, exactly. You've got a couple, you know, 100,000 kids out there freaking out. But when you try to book it at Velvet Jones, nobody goes. So I don't know.
There is that phenomenon of Santa Barbara being, what, 60 miles off I-5 that makes it hard for a touring act to get here, whether they're nationally known or what have you, or even, you know, just from another town in California if it's far enough away. But you mentioned singer-songwriters being strong here. Does that mean, I guess, that they that they get here a lot, or that they kind of, that we have a lot of good homegrown ones, or both? Like, as far as the distinction I'm drawing is people who come here versus people who come up here.
Exactly. I think that for homegrown ones, Santa Barbara has a pretty strong and tight-knit community. And for whatever reason, they seem to be the ones that stay more so than anybody else. I also feel like we've got, you know, epic amounts of inspiration all around us when you're speaking, like, naturally. The ocean's right there. The mountain's right there. If they want to go and, like, jump in their car and play Los Angeles, it's not that difficult. So,
sure.
Again, it's also one of those things. We've come, I think, more on the map, the touring map, in the past couple of years for everybody from singer-songwriters to hip-hop acts to rock acts. And I think the more that you establish your venues and show people that there is a scene and there are people that'll go out, the more often you're going to get high-profile or, you know, medium-profile acts kind of going off the beaten path to get here.
The way that Santa Barbara has come up in the past 3-4 years, as you say, what's motivating that? I mean, who's stepping up their game? Obviously, you know, the media is a part of it, and you can talk about that. But what factors are making this happen in such a short span of time?
It's a combination of things. I think that, I'm not going to go too far into it. I think when the economy went kind of crazy, 21 and over venues saw lowering their age restrictions as a way of, if not selling more alcohol, getting people in the door. So you had places like Velvet Jones and Soho say, well, normally we're 21 and over, you know, 5 or 6 nights a week, and now we're going to start doing, you know, 18 and over or all ages shows two or three times a week and kind of filling the void. And therefore, you know, they can bring in younger acts. They can see what the younger people are interested in. In addition, the Jeffrey, who owns Club Mercy, is kind of been this growing entity in my life. And
yeah, I know some people who work for him. It sounds like he doesn't stop.
No, he's an animal in the best way possible. But he's gone from booking 1 or 2 shows a night to booking like 4 or 5 shows a week.
Yes.
And bringing all walks of stuff in. And I'm looking at posters of some of the shows that he's booking as I'm talking to you. But he brought Billy Corgan and Dave Navarro to Muddy Waters, which is one of those things that just kind of go, what? He brought Joanna Newsom and the lead singer of the Fleet Foxes to the Libero last week. And was probably one of the best shows that I've seen all year.
Oh.
And he's booking stuff all over the place. And it's Velvet Jones and it's Soho when they're larger shows. And it's Muddy Waters and the Mercury Lounge when it's smaller shows. And he's willing to kind of create a space and create an environment for these bands. Like Frank Black from the Pixies is going to play the Mercury in like a week and a half. And, you know, I give him all the credit in the world for kind of helping to, you know, punch the music scene in the gut and say, wake up, do something. And he's been there to do it. So
plus it gives you more fascinating people to write about in an interview, right?
Oh, I told him from the get-go, I was like, if you keep doing this, I'm never going to leave my job.
I've been talking to Ali Cumingore, the associate arts editor at The Independent and the Poodle Radio music gatherer, producer, whatever you call it. And Ali, thank you so much for taking the time this morning.
Well, thank you guys.
Once again, this has been Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. I've been Colin Marshall. Please do tune in every Tuesday, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. And we've got more good stuff on the way for you next week and the week after and the week after, and more details on the Independent's website as well, where you can also listen again. Taking you out now, a track from Glenn Phillips. Here's Don't Lose Your Voice. Show details play in Soho on Sunday, August 8th. It's Poodle Radio on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara.